listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by API. Now from the Nowcast Network studios, here's Mike.
Hey, welcome to the Audio Nowcast. My name is Mike Rodriguez, and before we get going, let me introduce the guys. Over here on my right, we've got Bobby Osinski. Bobby!
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
Welcome back.
Yeah, thank you.
It's good to see you.
Good to be here.
Next to him, we've got Scott Gershon. Scott!
I'm playing on my iPhone right now, so just...
and over here on my left, we've got the one and only Rob Ironman Arbiter.
Hello there, Mike. And hello, everyone else.
See, look at... Guys, this is a small, little, intimate little group we have here.
You know? Nice.
Nice.
So can we just, like, text our, you know, the our show? Just you know, I'm getting way too much into this phone.
Yeah, I was going to say. Joining us today, we have our good friend, Dusty Wakeman from Mojave Audio.
All right, howdy, Dusty. Folks.
All right.
Good to be here.
Dusty. It's good.
Beautiful studio audience.
No, we've told them to be very quiet.
Yes, they will be very quiet. Wow, this is like either everybody's really busy or everybody's just too busy for the podcast. One of the two.
Well, I think it's more a celebration because Dusty's finally back. How many shows have you missed now? Probably 70 or 80 since you were last year?
A lot. It's been about 5 years worth.
Do we know what show number this is and what show number Dusty was on last?
This is show number 111.
Something tells me that's the easier answer to come by.
111.
111, and today is 111.
Ooh.
Ooh. Think about that.
Uh-oh.
Wow.
It's a day of one.
What does that mean? That's kind of weird if you think about it.
Yeah. Wow.
We're doing show
111.
There's only ones going on here.
I should have bought a lotto ticket.
Yeah. It's not too late.
It is in California. Anyhow, Scott, it's good to see you.
Hi there.
So,
I still got jet lag.
Before we start talking about AES and all the wonderful things that we saw over there, you were involved in something pretty cool.
Yeah.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about it?
I just came back a day or so ago from Asheville, where they were doing the Moog Fest. And it was amazing. It was 35,000 people sold out.
Wow.
3 days.
35,000?
35,000 people.
That's more than AES.
Sold out.
Yeah. A lot more.
And, twice as much.
And it was bands, you know, for 3 days. I don't know when it started in the morning, but the last band finished at 3 a.m. every night. And they had panels of all the different synth people. Moby was there.
It's basically Moogstock.
It's Moogstock. It is. It's great. It's a lot of electronic bands.
How many sine waves did you hear?
Well, you know,
all of them.
They actually had a great sound system. So whoever did the sound did a really great job. And they had outside concerts and indoor concerts. And Tangerine Dream was there.
Really?
Yeah, Moby was doing concerts. Wow. And it was great. Flaming Lips.
Wow.
Was there, and it was a lot of bands.
Did you see a bunch of like big synth module or synth on stage and stuff like that?
You know, everybody, actually, I saw a lot of laptops and iPads, as well as a lot of synths. One of the cool acts that I did see was an act named Amon Tobin. It's a guy. He puts himself in this structure that's probably, make a guess, about 40 feet wide and about 20 feet tall, and he plays inside it. But what's neat is it's 3D blocks, and when he projects on it, it has a very 3D look without glasses.
Right.
And everything moves. So it looks like it's building itself, constructing itself. Whoever did the graphics was just totally out of control.
A lot of image mapping and stuff like
that. Oh, absolutely. And so when you watched it, it looked like the squares were building itself or construction. It was like Transformers. Diego Stucka was also there. And we were watching it, and our jaws were pretty wide open.
That's cool.
And it was good. It was fun. It was, you know, again, it's some of the lowest bass sounds I think I've heard on the planet. Yeah, it was like, and also like, I think my body's moving. It's just like parts of the organs. But it was fun. You know, the crowd just ate it up.
That's awesome.
So it was good. It was fun to watch. You know, everybody there was into the technology in slightly different ways, and being able to share that was kind of cool.
Well, that's cool. Were you there on as panel member? Were you?
I was on a panel with Eric Persing from Spectrosonics.
Yeah.
So it was me, Diego, Richard Devine was on it.
I totally know who he is.
And we all kind of hung out and we had a lot of questions and answers and just talked about what we thought sound design was about and sound design for music, sound design for film, just sound design.
That's great. That's cool. We'll have to remember that next year when they do that.
Yeah, this is the second year they've done it, and this looked to be a huge success.
Wow, 35,000 people.
It sold out. So if anything, they need a bigger venue. But what was kind of neat was Asheville is a small town but very progressive.
Mm-hmm.
And literally everywhere they took over the whole town.
Wow.
So every restaurant was filled. All the concert mediums were filled. And it was a good time.
That's great. Awesome. Got to go next year. You worked with them, right?
I worked with the Montauban, yeah. I mixed an album in both stereo and surround. It was, and also for the video game, it was for... he did the music for a video game, and I can't think of what it is right now. But anyway, all the music that was in surround made it onto the video game as well.
Well, that's cool.
So that was an interesting. It was fun with him. It was really good.
Wow, what a small world, a small world.
And Richard Devine did the music for a TV show that I produced.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It's just a lot of great talent, a lot of great. To be honest, a lot of great sounds. Mm. Utilized in very, very creative ways. And it was nice because it's something you're not going to hear on the radio.
Right.
It's not you're going to hear in the top 40. And the audience ate it up. I mean, they couldn't get enough of the stuff. And it was nice to hear something that, was a little bit different than the mainstream.
Asheville's actually a very hot place. It's for music. There's also... a thing that happens in December with...
they have another big concert there as well.
It's... I can't think of the band.
Oberheimfest.
Warren Haynes is...
Government Mule?
Government Mule. They have Mule Fest there in December every year.
Wow.
And it's for 3 days, and it's the same thing. They take over the whole town, and there's lots of concerts and everything. And this has been going on for 5 or 6 years, apparently.
Wow.
But it's supposedly, quite an event.
Cool. Wow. Well, speaking of events, let's segue into AES 2011. One of the cool things that I saw over at AES was the 500 series Moog filter. That was really cool. But we'll talk about gear in a second. But just really quick, guys, I know Dusty was there and Bobby, you were there. Mm-hmm. Just what did you think of the show this year? Bobby, what did you think of the show this year?
It's amazing how far this show has fallen. I can remember, and I don't want to sound like an old fart here, but I can remember when it was really cool and really vibrant, and now it's sleepy. There's a lot of manufacturers that don't even show up.
Right.
And what really bothered me was it seemed like the average age was 45 and older. There were so many graybeards that after a while... I started to feel old myself. I wanted to get out of there. It was like I just have to be around some young blood for a change.
Wow.
And so I left and went to Brooklyn.
What about you, Dusty? What did you think from a first of all, Dusty, who's from Mojave Audio, you had a booth there.
Yeah, we had a booth there.
For your company. And so as a
exhibitor, it was better than the previous two.
Yeah, I agree.
To paint a positive picture. But, a lot of us, we're a small company and a lot of us that show there, that still show there, are just questioning why we really need this trade show. We're all going to see
each other. New York.
Yeah, in New York.
Yeah.
We're all going to see each other in 2 months.
Right.
In
NAMM.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. Because
there's not a lot of, even like our German, our European distributor, he can fly there and as fast as I can from Los Angeles. He's coming to NAMM. He didn't come to AES. And a lot of our international people didn't even...
So the attendance was low?
15,000.
But that was better than 2 years ago.
Well, the thing is, because there aren't like large format consoles as a big priority and all the stuff that AES used to be about.
The pro audio is very blurred right now.
It's like a boutique audio show, but it's just like, it's so, for a little company like ours, it's really expensive. I mean, New York's a blast. The parties are a blast. But I go to parties, and I mean, I can see Bobby anytime I want to. Yeah, I can see Ed Cherney or Al Schmidt anytime I want to. This is Los Angeles, you know? I can see you guys.
Right.
You know, so it's just kind of nuts to spend that much money.
Yeah.
And your dealers can find out about any kind of new information thanks to the internet.
In 2 seconds.
I mean, we don't do any business there.
Yeah.
You know, it's all just a big party, really. You can't tell what a microphone sounds like at AES.
You know?
So I just direct people. I have the same thing on my laptop in a keynote presentation that's on our website.
Yeah.
You know, so people can, and I have a, you know, Aphex headphone box, right. So it sounds decent, and it's like they can either listen to it there or they can listen to it at home on the internet. It's the same stuff.
And I think a lot of the stigma of if you're not at the show, the company must be in trouble. I think a lot of that's gone away. I think people say if you're not at the show, you're just saving a bunch of money.
Yeah.
Well, UA hasn't had a booth for years.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Erica goes to the shows and makes the rounds and has meetings. Manly, for the first time, didn't have a booth this year. Ivana was there and having meetings.
Right.
It's like that's...
You could probably do the same thing by having a big hotel suite and just saying anyone you need to talk to.
But the hotels are so bloody expensive in New York.
Yeah, it's $250 for like the bottom end.
If you're lucky. I couldn't find anything even that low.
But if you've got to go to AES and do the hotels anyway and do a booth.
Yeah.
That's good. And all the
See, that's the other thing. I don't know about you, but I heard from a lot of exhibitors complaining that it costs so much for a booth for a show that was that size,
right?
That they were saying, why do I have to pay all this money for the return, the little return that I'm getting? So I don't know how you felt about that.
But I feel terrible about it. I don't like it.
Yeah. Let me.
You know, and a lot of us don't like it.
You know what they had in October, which was kind of fun, was the AMP show in LA,
right?
Where all these manufacturers grab a big hotel suite and they just all fill it with gear, and then you walk from room to room checking out the gear.
Right.
But that's the way AES used to be.
And that would be
when
fun.
When they had it at the Waldorf. Anybody remember at the Waldorf?
Yeah.
And it was fun. It was a blast when that happened.
Right.
And now there's nothing like that.
And just to put some real numbers to, we're talking about expensive. We're talking, you know, tens of thousands of dollars on the low end going up to,
$100,000,
50 to 100 grand on the high end. So these are you know, that's a lot of gear you have to push. But I will say that
The NAB and the AES and Music Mesa. Right.
But it's not all, you know, certain manufacturers really benefit from an AES, especially when it's held in their backyard. And I'll tell you one is API. API gets a lot of people there because, well, for one thing, they're one of the few console makers that are still alive. And not only are they alive, they're actually thriving. And it's in their backyard, you know, because they're down in Maryland. So
what kind of people did they get? Was it end users?
You got a lot of users. You got a lot of educational customers that come there.
It was buyers then.
They get buyers. AES does really well with them. But they're kind of set up, especially with their product, for an AES. They usually have a really nice big booth, a lot of hands-on stuff. People can see it. And they were demoing the 1608, the automated 1608, which, by the way, is phenomenal, and I'll talk a little bit about that later. But for a company like that, actually, I'm trying to think of another company like that.
Yeah. Well, anybody that's SSL, located out there.
Even the SSL booth was small.
Harrison, SSL, and Phonics, now was Avid.
Yeah, I mean, SSL was just
was part of the
10 feet wide and about, you know,
it was
four spaces long.
10 by 20.
Yeah.
It was 10 by 20, 10 by 40, something like that.
So was this the Avid show?
Well, even Avid wasn't even it wasn't their normal big booth. Theirs was cut down too. The only part about the Avid, you know, was the Pro Tools 10, and that actually got some buzz. But, you know, there's a lot of people that you didn't see there. But I agree with Dusty is it was better than it's been for 2 years, but I also see what Bobby says is, you know, it's going down. It's going down.
You know what else? There wasn't that much software there. There was some, but not that much. Not certainly as much as you'd find at NAM.
You have basically
a whole room that's filled with it. But
hasn't AES traditionally been a hardware company?
It's
been outboard gear and mixers and tape decks.
Yeah.
And,
yes, but the industry has changed.
Well, yes, but
so much.
You know
that's
what?
Why there are eight people there.
Let's, right, yeah. Exactly.
They're catering to the wrong crowd.
Exactly.
Let's talk a little bit about, before we go in, you know, we're going to go talk a little bit about AES on a really conceptual level about the trade show. But before we stray too far, let's talk a little bit about the gear that we saw there, because there's some things I want to talk about. But Bobby, do you have anything that stuck out in your mind that you want to talk about? And right now, you know, everybody, Pro Tools 10, and we're going to talk about that too. So, you know.
Yeah, the API console was the highlight for me.
It's a nice board.
Yeah.
1608 was awesome.
I guess. Nothing jumped out. I got to say, I just, there was nothing. Well, the things I like are little things, you know. I had four or five things on my website, on my blog this week, none of which I can remember right now. But BobbyOsinski.blogspot.com, I think last week I did an overview. I had three or four or five things.
Okay. How about you, Dusty? I know you said the 1608. Anything else?
Yeah, I love that. And the little Moog, all the 500 series
stuff.
Yeah,
the 500
cool.
series is fun.
You know, but it's just like, you know, it's just not that big a deal.
But here's a couple things. I'm going to, you know, to defend trade shows, one of the good things, if you can get into a trade show, because, you know, it's getting harder to get into trade shows. But the AES, fortunately, is an easier one because there's a lot of exhibitors that can give out passes. The great thing about it is you can compare a lot of gear. Even if you just do a quick glance through, you can just compare a lot of gear. And a good example is microphones, all right? Now, it's not a place where you're going to make critical listening tests, but you can really hear crap fast. There is a couple just craptacular microphones that I heard. I mean, they were so bad. And to be honest, you don't really know how bad they are until you go and you listen to another good microphone in the same environment, and you go, wow, that kind of, you know, you go over, wow, that kind of cuts, that kind of has a great little something, and you go listen to this one.
But if you can hear how bad they are at a trade show, they're like,
they're bad.
They're not even worth discussing.
Totally. They're horrible. But you know, these are cheap mics, and you can really, I don't know, there's just, if you're going to spend some money on a microphone, you know, a lot of people don't. I've been with friends of mine who want to put together a small little studio, and they really don't know the difference between a good microphone and a bad microphone. They just see the windscreen, or they see the casing, or they see the grill, and they don't know. And you say, no, this is what has bite, it has high end, it's open, yada, 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 warmth, whatever. It's not until you can take them to a trade show, you play this one, and then you go over here, and here's a really great microphone, now listen to this, then it's like, wow, the lights come on.
But that's one of the problems, and I think you probably find this trying to sell microphones, in that it's very difficult to audition microphones, right. You know, especially if you're not in a media center like we are. If you're in Oklahoma someplace and you want to hear, you know, some Mojave microphones and some Royers or the new Neumanns or whatever, you're out of luck,
right.
You know?
Mm-hmm. No, that's true. So, I mean, that's one of the things you can do at a trade show is you can just, even if you get a little sketch pad of those. And like I said, I heard some really bad mics. And I've heard some really good ones, you know. One that I actually pointed out on the Facebook page was Charter Oak made a really nice mic. It's the SA538B mic. And it just sounded really nice for the price. And it's about the, you know, sub grand, you know, and it just was a nice sounding microphones. And those are those, you know, those little boutique mics like that are just, I would never hear that if it wasn't for a trade sale like that.
But you know, there's plenty of resources out there for people.
Right.
Number one, if you're putting together a home studio and you don't know what you're doing, you really need to have a relationship with somebody you trust, like Sweetwater.
Right.
Is probably the best example of that, who knows where you're spending, so that your system is balanced out, so that you're not spending too much money on this,
right,
and then putting up a crappy mic.
But it's just a good, when you go to a trade show like that, you can just hear really good. You'll be able to hear a Mojave, and you go, wow, that's why Andrew likes to use that, because it has a really nice cut.
See, there should be a touring show called Transducer. Well, you got speakers and mics,
right,
and then you've got listening tests where you go, you know, to 10 big cities in the U.S., where people can A/B.
That's happening, actually. Brad Lundy from Transamerica Audio, who's a importer distributor,
And a really smart guy, a real thinker.
Really smart guy. Right? He's been talking about doing the independent audio tour for years, and he wanted to go to like 10 secondary markets with a bunch of like-minded manufacturers and distributors. And I saw him at the show, and he said, finally, I'm getting it together. It's going to happen, you know, the beginning of next year, we're going to start to do this. Mm-hmm. And I don't know who the just the manufacturers he distributes, I'm sure, are going to be there, which is
Bach, ATC.
Yeah, GML.
Right.
You know, some.
See, we would do that in a minute. I'd rather spend the money to do that.
Yeah.
Than to go to AES.
There you go, yeah.
Right.
You
know? The good thing about AES, though, more so than NAMM, is people can get into AES. You can't get into NAMM.
But the other part of AES, though, which NAMM doesn't have, are the classes. I mean, that's there's the exhibit stuff.
But wait a second. I have a real bone to pick with this. So last year I did my social media for musicians and engineers presentation for over 2 days. It was extremely well attended. It really went over well. This year I was going to do it again, and they canceled me at the last minute. Why did they cancel me? Because they couldn't get a sponsor for it. And I said, so when do you have to have a sponsor in order to speak at AES? Since when did that? Well, no, you need a sponsor. They actually had people trying to sell.
They're actually
it.
Charging for the lectures. I mean, what does a sponsor do? Do they pay for it?
They get to hang up a banner.
For basically. X amount of money. I don't know what it was, but I'll tell you, I was pretty offended by that personally. It's like, well, screw this. Don't even ask me anymore. As far as I'm concerned,
that's pretty low.
Yeah, I mean. The way AES now, it doesn't look good. The outlook is not good unless they do something to really bring the manufacturer.
It should be the AES show at NAMM.
Well, they could have all the technical meetings at NAMM.
I mean, really?
But see, the problem is with NAMM, once again,
everybody's there anyway.
You can't get in. We can get in with our connections, and we can get in with, you know, if you know,
who is it you want to get in?
Well,
end users, right?
End users. Yeah. They want people that you're gonna sell
them
to.
We want qualified end users. We don't want to. You can go to Guitar Center on a Saturday,
right?
You know, we don't want the NAMM show to turn into Guitar Center on a Saturday. That's what Guitar Center's for.
No, I understand that, but you know? Like for instance, here's a good example: is if you're, let's say, you're out stuck in Kansas City, and you want to put together a room, you're going to put together a nice facility, you know what? Spend, you know, $2,000 and go to either LA, San Francisco, New York, and go to AES for a day and really look at the gear that you
get. Yeah, I still say that you can't tell.
On the floor.
You can tell maybe a bad microphone, but you can't decide between a Sound Deluxe and a bot. You can't tell enough.
You can get enough information to start narrowing your list.
Okay, so you narrow it down.
That's the thing.
Wait, if you do what E3 does, E3 is a private show for gaming.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So the public is not allowed in. To get in, all you need to do is get a business card that says, I'm in that business. That of gaming, and you can get in. What they don't want is the general public. So AES can do a AES/NAMM pass, saying I'm a professional, I own a studio, I own a this, I own a that.
Now, I've been down on AES, you know, in our little discussion here, but I got to say there is some hope. One of the problems with AES was the management, the managing director who's kind of stuck in, you know, the 20-year-old model. He's gone now. This was his last show. They're having a new managing director come in and a new president. The president is Frank Wells, who's the editor of ProSound News, who's very sharp and very together. And
Frank's a good guy.
If there is a hope, the hope is with him and a new managing director that something's going to change and they're going to figure it out.
Yeah, they're never going to shut down voluntarily the trade show, though. That's their cash cow.
Yeah.
That's like the Grammys and Maris. That's why it really exists.
And I don't think,
you know,
I don't think they should.
Secondary.
I don't think they should. I think they can make it work. I think they can turn it into something.
What if next year there was half as many exhibitors as was in New York?
But if it was more intimate, it would be great. I mean, what we were talking about.
No, because if you feel like you need to comparison shop and you're going there as someone who's setting up a facility, if you know that half the manufacturers aren't there, you're going to lose interest because you're not getting a good representation of what you're choosing from.
Yeah, you look at your vendor list, but quite frankly, me personally, I would probably go if they were just had like, you know, two tin cans and a string between them.
Yeah, but you're insane. No, 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 two manufacturers that each had tin cans.
Yeah, that's right.
But it's incompatible.
You know, you mentioned Brad Lundy. Brad Lundy's like, we were Brad Lundy's booth is supposed to be.
That's right.
That's why we had such a good spot. We took it over because he bailed on it. He was there.
Yeah.
But he's one of the big proponents trying to shut down. And I think that roadshow, you make it affordable for people like Mojave Audio to do it. We could reach so many more people.
Yeah, yeah.
Go to Memphis and Austin.
Why can't that be sponsored by AES?
Could be.
That's the thing. Yeah. Is if you give them,
because this is their cash cow.
Right. But have a lot of little cash cows. I mean, right. Really.
Yeah, they could make money off of that, too.
Yeah. Or, you know, New York is just one stop on the – maybe it's the kickoff.
I mean, we already do events like that with NARIS through the P&E wing.
Yeah. Right.
You know, we'll go to Seattle or Memphis or Nashville or someplace like – or Austin, and they'll sponsor it. So those kind of things are already going on.
See, because I think AES – the thing I like about AES is it has the science bite of all the papers and of all the – of all the classes and the discussion and things like that. I mean, there's some really cool value to that.
But don't forget, the way it started was it was a conference
week
was centered around the papers that happened to have a small exhibition.
Right.
And before you knew it, the balance shifted completely, where now it's the exhibition more than the conference itself.
Right.
And there are numerous other associations that kind of do the same thing and will insist that the exhibition stay on the tabletop level and makes it, you know, affordable for manufacturers to do that. Well, I'm not saying to go that far, but
you hit on a good point though, is affordable. You know, if mm-hmm. you make it a win-win for manufacturers, they're going to come back. And mm-hmm. that's the thing. New York is tremendously expensive to hold a trade show.
You have to ship your stuff from Los Angeles.
Yeah.
The shipping expenses alone are
and the union expenses.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
At least they went from 4 days to three this year, so you didn't have that one day of nobody there except for the Teamsters.
And it's not over a holiday weekend, and there's all kinds of things that definitely help out. But I just think they need to kind of revamp the formula a little bit and just kind of make it a little bit more not only user-friendly but exhibitor-friendly. And I think it'll survive.
I was on the wrong end of the wrath of the New York Teamsters in New York Union. When I was working for AMEC, I was a VP of sales and marketing, and the guy who was my boss was English. And when he came over, he made a comment to the Daily that the Teamsters have two speeds, either slow or stop. Well, the next day, that was on the front page of the Daily.
Oh my God.
Along with this picture.
He's probably still waiting for his case.
Well, wait. Actually, that's kind of what happened. When we got to the booth and we had a bunch of big consoles set up, there was his picture with the Daily with an arrow through it. So we just thought, okay, they're trying to intimidate us. Well, that's exactly what happened. At the end of the show, we were exactly last in line for all the cases. And even then, when everybody was gone, we still couldn't find the cases. So finally, they get the cases, they get packed up. When they got back to England, they opened up one of the big console cases, one of the crates, and there was an open can of red paint.
Oh.
Yeah. So they made their mark.
Well, wow. You know what? That's the thing, man. The union guys there are you can't do anything at a trade show. Not just in New York. It's the same way in, you know, L.A. It's like you would think you'd be able to, you know, hang up a banner, or you think you would be able to plug in this or plug in that, and you literally cannot do any of that. You have to hire someone from the facility, and you have to hire them to come. You know, the electricians come to your electrical, and then you have to hire a hand to help you can't even put your booth together.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't believe what it costs to rent a chair.
What does it cost to rent a chair?
I don't know, like, you know, $50 a day or something like that. It's crazy.
Yeah.
A waste basket is $30 a day.
Oh, it's ridiculous.
And everything's a la carte. If you want carpet padding underneath your carpet, that's – you know.
Yeah, but that's not the union guys. That's the Coliseum. Nickel
Diamond.
Right.
That's Freeman.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a whole – I mean, it's expensive.
Having just come back from the airport, it's like a $5 bottle of water – where you can get it for a buck,
right?
At most,
right?
You know, it's $10 sandwiches that should be $2.
Yeah,
it's like, you know what? They do it because they can,
right?
Because they can, right?
Well, anyhow, you know,
which is why we just can't afford, you know, to go to every trade show when you're a company like Mojave. You know, so we've got NAMM and we've got Music Mesa, and that kind of covers it. You know,
yeah.
Have I told you how much I like Mojave mics?
No, you haven't.
Okay.
Not recently.
Well, I'll tell you what. You know what? We're going to take a break right now. And when we come back, we're going to talk about how much we like Mojave Mike.
Can we fade out with, have I told you lately how I love you?
Have I told you lately?
Running in the background.
All right. We'll see you on the other side.
You're listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by API and Westwave Audio. Have a question for the panel? Would you like to be a guest on the Audio Nowcast and live in the LA area? Email us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com.
Hey.
Stand by.
Hey, what are we doing?
Stand by.
Beep, beep, beep.
Hey, welcome to the Audio Nowcast. Oh, wait. That's the opening. Hey, welcome back. And before the break, we were talking about AES and why Bobby hates it so much. No, he doesn't hate it. I'm just kidding.
But it's fun.
No, it's great.
It's just whether it needs to exist or not is the question.
Exist in the way it is right now.
Yeah.
So anyhow, one of the things at AES that came out that was kind of the 900-pound gorilla was Pro Tools 10. And I sat in on the Pro Tools 10 demo, and it was awesome, and the software is phenomenal. And before we get going, I just want to let everybody know that I actually have two systems on order for where I mix. So we've already ordered our upgrade. Having said that, I am severely perplexed by how they are – where they're going, you know.
So when you say you ordered two upgrades, what did you order?
We upgraded our hardware. We upgraded all our hardware. We upgraded to the new HDX cards and then Pro Tools 10. And we actually bought brand new Macs. And we were going to do that anyhow. We got the approvals back in September, you know, and we'll work for corporations, so it takes a little bit. And we got the check, and we gave it we buy a lot of our stuff through RSPE, great guy over there. Ordered it, and as soon as they got the check, I called them up and I told Dave, sit on the check. I said, don't do anything. Because,
so did you have an inkling that...
Well, no, I kind of knew, especially from last year, and I kind of knew that, that you know, they were going to show something this year. And you've heard the rumors, and, you know, you can read on logs and stuff, you know. So even if they didn't have anything, at least I wanted to get through AES to make sure that it was all good. But then, you know... Once we found out that they were indeed coming out with a new system, it was really great because I would have really kicked myself had I upgraded to...
Kicked RSPE without telling you.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, well, I upgraded to 9 in like... It may have been within the last month. I got to go home tonight and check.
Okay.
Me too.
Yeah, and I'm really pissed about it.
Yeah. Well, anyhow, that being said...
But you ordered, I mean, the HDX cards aren't shipping yet. So.
No, but we've already ordered them.
It's pre-ordered.
We're pre-ordered. We have our order in. As soon as they get here, they're, you know, we'll get them. And actually, since they're going to go on new systems, the good thing is we can get them. We can get it all installed. We can get it up and running, and we can do some tests before we rip out the main systems and put those back in. Because there's things that nobody really knew an answer for that I was trying to get. Like video compatibility with like the Mojos with the serial and then also the analog Mojo and then time code and machine control and things like that. That, you know, everybody's saying, yeah, it's supposed to support.
What I'm curious though is I went from a TDM system to native, which kind of blew my mind because I took sessions that on an HD3 would bring Pro Tools to a crawl, put it into Pro Tools 9. And added probably 2 to 3 times the amount of plugins and barely made a scratch within the CPU. I mean, we did 48 5.1 altiverbs.
Yeah.
It's and crazy. It played. We were doing stuff. I did a mix.
What machine?
Yeah, what machine? Was it 8-core or 12-core?
8-core.
Oh, that's awesome.
So when I did Gears of War, I took my mix because I maxed out two systems. And then in addition to that, I put on 2 more speakerphones, some ear cam. I think I put in 8 stereo altiverbs, and 16 L316s, and it still only hit 60%. So in addition to a Cision, so my HD3 couldn't handle it. I added all of that in addition.
So you're native then. What interfaces are you using?
My 192s.
That's cool.
And then I also, I got 64 ins and outs.
Got it.
And for me, for what I do, that's plenty.
Right.
So what I do is I still have two systems and I have a third recorder. And we have a SSL box that basically goes straight out of one machine into another. Right. And I get 64 ins as my recorder. I don't need any more than 64 ins. I'm done. So all of a sudden, the native was very, very powerful. Now, when I looked at the specs of the HDX, which is one card, my question is, because I don't know the answer, is when you look at one single HDX card and a native, what is the difference in power? And that, you know, in other words, why do you pay? Now, I understand if you get two cards, all of a sudden the game changes.
No, well, here's the thing. You get an HDX card, right?
Yes.
And you have your Pro Tools native, let's say. The thing about the new plugin format, the AAX plugin format, mm-hmm. as well as Pro Tools 10, is it's going to be able – you're going to still be able to operate like you had a native card because you're still going to be able to harness the power of your native processing in your Mac. And then you've got even more with this HDX card.
So the HDX card is native. It gives you everything native and it gives you an extra card?
Well, no.
Basically, think of it this way. The whole thing between TDM cards and host-based processing is that TDM cards use chips that were based on integer math, mm-hmm. and the host processor could do floating point math. Now with the new HDX cards, you have floating point processors on the cards themselves, which is why the plugins, the AAX format will sound the same, whether it's on those cards or native, you know, they now have a unified sound and unified headroom.
But there's a lot more headroom, though.
But that's because it's floating point.
Yeah. Right, but I understand that the cards now are the whole level of Pro Tools is going up, and I applaud them. I think it's fantastic. What I'm curious, though, is one card and native seem to have similar power. I want to know, now, two cards, three cards, different game. But within a one card against a native, what is the difference other than latency issues of pre-dubbing?
Well, the latency is a huge thing. And in a music tracking studio, for us, the latency is a killer. I mean, we can't do that stuff host-based. But the thing to think of it is when you have that HDX card in your machine, it doesn't stop you from doing the host-based stuff.
Right.
But it's nice to know that you're not bogging down your CPU, which might be busy with other things, un-Pro Tools or just something else. You get dedicated floating point processing now on a card and lots of it. So it's a bit difficult to know how it compares. I mean, Avid is very sort of blurry on purpose about saying, is it as powerful as an HD3 or an HD5 or an HD whatever? Because it really depends on the plugins and how they're
Although the common thing that you hear around the show and what I heard and you read online is that it's equivalent to an HD5 system.
That's what they said.
In other words, native is easily an HD5, HD6.
Right.
So, and an HDX.
You know what? I don't find that. As soon as I start using a bunch of speaker phones and stuff, native, I don't find that. I find that the HD, the big HD system is still much, much more powerful.
I'm just saying native because I use a lot of plugins, especially finicky, like the EarCam plugins, barely worked on TDM and always crashed my system.
Right.
Went to native, happy as a clam.
Well, here's the thing, too, about 10 that really kind of evens out and blurs at the same time is you got the RAM cache, which...
Yeah, well, that's a no-brainer winner. That's
sure.
Yeah.
Which kind of equalizes it on a whole nother level because you pre-cache all this stuff and you get performance out of your native that you wouldn't have gotten before.
I think Pro Tools 10 is absolutely fantastic. So I've got really no issues on that front. The only thing which is difficult is, you know, we're still in the rental business with dubbing stages. And one of the things that we're now in a quandary, and that is we have to make sure that all the other editing firms can be able to play back on our systems. So now some people are not 9, so we need some 8s. Now we need the 9 natives because we need to get the HDX. Now what's happened is figuring out which of how many do we need. And it always gets a little bit tricky, and it's very expensive because in this climate, you can't afford to make bad decisions.
No, you're absolutely right.
So it's always a little bit tricky. Then I think that even with the HDX, though, we're not totally against it, but we're kind of like trying to figure that out. And also, we're a huge Euphonics house. So we love that because the stuff that's happening on the Euphonics side is absolutely amazing. It's basically turning them into icons. So now you can use that. You can use the summing of the Euphonics. And the new ones. And it's just – what's great is all the color coding comes up on your – so everything you see on the screen, if it's like greens and blues, it comes up on the Euphonics. Yeah, yeah. So it's pretty amazing, very cool. The only thing that's kind of made a ripple – I think in our community is the thought, the discussion, the little clause at the bottom says, trade in your 192s.
Mm.
Now, the thing is, we're still paying that stuff off. I mean, you know, you buy so much of it, and sure, it could be legacy, but nobody wants to find out that their stage now becomes unstable. It may or may not work. So that's always the thing we're all kind of scratching our heads going, but we have a digital console that's going into digital Pro Tools. We don't even need the A to Ds. How's this working? What about the SSL boxes? What about MADI boxes? What about? And all of a sudden, to spend more money buying exactly what you own is a little bit tricky.
No, that's my point with – the problem I have with Pro Tools and with the upgrades is, first of all, it's expensive. And I don't think they're thinking long term, because we're going on the assumption right now that, you know, the card-based processor is going to be a viable format in 3 years, 2 years, 5 years, right? If you're going to have to sink all this money.
Well, for a lot of people, it isn't necessary.
Right. And that's what I'm saying. It just seems like it's really expensive. For me, they came in, I mean, the card system, for instance, if you got a Pro Tool system, a brand new Pro Tool system with their 16x16 analog HDX with the interface, that's $12,000 just for the card. That's 12 grand. That can buy you a lot of gear.
And not only that's only if you have one 192, right?
That's not an exchange. That's just if you were going to buy a new system right now. So let's say I'm putting together Westwave, because that's what I've got. I've got 8 digital ins and outs, and I've got 16 analog ins and outs, right? Just for my cards, it's going to cost me the card in one interface is going to cost me about 12 grand. Back when I put my system together, that was probably the only option in town. Now, you know, there's a lot of other options out there. There really is that sound great, that can get the job done.
So Nintendo's going to love this. This will be a big boost, you know.
I just think it's – they're really, you know, hitting – the price for an upgrade for Pro Tools, if you go from 9 to 10, it's like $300. If you go from 8 to 10 for HD – it's $1,000. If you go from 7 or below to 10, it's $2,500 for the software.
Well, you know, if you're recording studio and you're a one-off, or let's say even a four-room, it's actually not that much money. In the olden days where you have to get a new console, you have to get a new SSO 9000, all of a sudden, that's $1 million, $500,000. You're forking out a lot of dough. So I think from that perspective, it's not a massive hit. But in the post-production community where people, you know, a 10-room house is small.
Right.
I mean, we got more systems than I can count. And all of a sudden, if you have 100, 200, 300, 400 systems, you say, I got 100, and you got to upgrade it. All of a sudden, these are big checks.
No, they're huge. And that's what I'm saying is it seems like you're hitting – you're gouging the people that support you the most that you really need to keep on, because now a lot of people are going to be thinking, do I want to do that? I mean, I'm in that exact place right now. Right now, my system is 6 years old, right? Works great. We record all our podcasts on it, but I want to upgrade, and I want to do a big upgrade because I've got some things going on, and I'm thinking about, you know, facility wise, like a giant sinking some major money into putting together another room because I want to. I'm thinking about moving my studio.
But if you could build a room for $50,000, that's no big deal.
But here's the thing, though. Okay. It was all fine and dandy. I was going to go all Pro Tools, the whole shebang. And then I started doing a little bit of research that kind of got me scared. For one thing, if you go on Avid's Pro Tools site and you see that this is the last point release that they're going to support a ton of gear on. Yeah. For instance, this is 10 192s. After that, they're gone. The other thing, too, is the 96 IO. They're gone. The sync, right? The sync box.
Right.
This is going to be the last version that they're going to support their sync box. Okay, that's another $3,000. The MIDI I/O, this Pro Tools 10 is going to be for their MIDI I/O. It's going to be the last release that it's going to support their MIDI I/O. And I'm thinking, why? Why is? I mean, the MIDI I/O is all USB. It's like doesn't.
Well, by the way, the podcast format doesn't allow you to see me jumping up and down, waving my hand, waiting for my turn to talk. So let
you,
me know.
You will.
Because
you
I have answers for a lot of
people. Okay. But seriously, and then you've got, you know, if you, the Control 24, it's going to be the last one. It's going to be the last for Pro Control. There's a lot of
but
gear.
But that's their business model.
Right,
their
I understand
business
that.
Model has always been to sell hardware. Not
that
software.
Company had reached saturation.
Right.
It wasn't like it's going to be able to go
1,500%. It's going to force everybody.
Rob is on the ceiling at
it's
going to
force everybody. You know what? It's not Pro Tools it by itself, though. This is working with digital in general. I mean, it's just – it's kind of this temporary thing, you know? Hold on 1 second. So what kind of changed – my whole thinking, though, all right, what kind of really just totally changed is when I sat down and started mixing on an analog console, the 1608. Then you look at an automated 1608, all right? You look at that, and for the price of the D control, for the price of the Icon, you know, you can get 32-channel automated 1608 with DAW control. It's like, well, you know, you don't need any updates. It's going to sound great forever, and you can control your DAW. I mean, it just gives you more options out there.
I have no problem with the software because the 10 is a huge change from 8 and 9, and they should because now that you can use any hardware you want with it, they got to make some money, and that makes sense. So if you want to buy the software and you pay for it, I get it. No problem on that front. The only thing that makes me quizzical is that I have to now fork over a lot more money to do exactly the same thing that I've been doing.
No, you don't.
Well, no. I mean, it's
no, you don't.
Well, the reason, yes,
I am. I do get a turn, right?
No,
yes,
you are.
I'm being so patient.
No. As soon as Scott's done, we're going to you, Rob.
All I know is my old 888s and 88220s don't work in 9.
You mean the ones from 1997? Does.
Well, but eventually, I mean...
Well, they shouldn't work.
My Fender bass from 1961 works.
Okay, Rob, that's true. Go.
Here's the thing.
Talk me down, Rob.
No, you're right about a lot of the points, but you have to take a long view here. One of the things that Avid did with announcing all this stuff is kind of give you a little insight to the future, but you have to realize, yes, a lot of these things after 10 are going to be obsolete. You know, 192s are not going to be officially developed for or tested anymore, but... Number one, 10 is brand new. We're at the very beginning of 10. There will be dot releases. 10 is, if it's like other software releases, it's going to have a life of a year or more before any of this actually becomes something to worry about.
Right.
In the meantime, HD has been around for 10 years. It's had a really long run, I think longer than any other platform they've ever had.
Right.
Just because they say that they're going to stop supporting a piece of hardware doesn't mean it's going to stop working. It takes... What happens is it gets dropped off the testing grid, and they don't develop software for it specifically anymore, but they don't actually take out support for it. So, for instance, I'm still with 9 using my ADAP bridges, which are long ago unsupported, but they still happen to work fine. There's a little kludginess when you set them up, but it basically works fine. Avid has a limited number of engineers and a limited number of testers, and they test so many different products on so many different platforms that to test some of these older technologies is just something they can't do. We put them out of business.
But they should say that on the website where they say, after this stuff would not be supported.
Well, they did say that in their announcements. I don't know what it says on the website.
It says, as we move forward, please be aware of the following. Pro Tools 10 will be the final feature release for Pro Tools HD TDM systems. And then it says it will also be the final supported feature release for legacy DigiDesign interfaces and controllers, including, and then there's a whole list.
Right, meaning it's going to be the last release where they actually say, we have tested this stuff and it works. But Avid and before that, DigiDesign has a long history of discontinuing support for a product, and the product still works for a while.
No, and I – okay, go ahead.
The other thing I just want to say is in a giant facility – yes, to retool everything with this new hardware is incredibly expensive and not at all practical, especially the way budgets and projects are these days. But the idea is there's no need to retool an entire, you know, you don't have every single editorial room has to be bumped up to the new hardware or anything. You take the more critical systems. For one thing, there's going to have to be a period where everybody gets comfortable that the new stuff even works. And that the plugins work, because AAX is a completely different plugin format. This is going to be a long time.
What's always tricky, and it's something we have to solve. Go to a dubbing stage, because and I'm speaking. I'm going to represent Post here, because there's a lot of Post, especially in LA and New York, and we're at. Because what happens is let's say you edit on 9, you mix on 10, they make changes. You now have to take that off of 10 and go, oh, wait a minute, I can't fix this on 9. So then you got to find a 10 system. Now all of a sudden, your rooms have to become strategic placements of who can fix what, because backwards compatibility doesn't happen. It's not like 9 has been around for 5-10 years. 9's been around pretty short. Yeah. So the 9 to 10 has been a very short run.
Right.
And again, we're doing testing ourselves. We're all trying to get a couple tens and find out exactly what the compatibility issues are.
But that's been the case with every major release. I mean, if you had 6, 7 was trauma. If you had 7, 8 was trauma. I mean, it's a different issue than the hardware issue, because there's going to be a long period where you're going to have a lot of 8, 9, and 10 systems all coexisting.
Yes, but I think the lifespan of 9 was pretty short.
It was.
So it's not like – and again – if you're not in the business of art, but in the business of business, that it's a bad business sense because nobody saw it coming. So they're still paying 9 off, and now they're going to pay 10. And companies don't want to do that. They don't want to be in the business of keep spending. At some point, you got to make a return on your dollar and your investment.
But the thing is, you can't expect a company like Avid not to continue to develop new products.
I mean, they have to. I agree. I think Avid is just being they have to survive, right? They're trying to sell gear, and their best customers are the customers they have right now. I totally get it. That's why we're upgrading. But I'm just saying that at the price point that they came in, I think they're losing a little bit of touch, because there's a lot of options out there. I'll tell you, you know, the software's cool. Don't get me wrong. There's a lot of cool things. I work on Pro Tools every day. I'm looking forward to all the clip-based gain and that. That's going to be awesome. But you know what? There's other programs that have had clip-based gain for a long time, right?
Absolutely. So,
and then you look at some really cool stuff that's happening in software. For instance, Studio One version 2 with the built-in, baked-in Melodyne is phenomenal. If you haven't seen that video, go to our Facebook page and there's a link to it where Melodyne is baked into Studio One version 2 and it's baked into the clip, so you just click on the clip and it'll split it out with the DNA direct access, and you can,
that's pretty cool,
and you can edit right there, do all your little tweaking, and then it'll remember that, and if you copy and paste or whatever, I mean, it's just that kind of stuff. It's just when you start seeing some of these other options that are out there, and then you go back to looking at, you know, $12,000 to get into the game, I just, for me, it absolutely changed.
You know what? That's if you're only worrying about the high end. Avid has such a wide range of stuff, and you can do a native system for so much cheaper than that. Yeah. And the native stuff is great. So it's not really a fair comparison, because it's not like with the Studio One, and I think it's very cool, but it's not like with that you get the super high-end hardware.
You can get high-end. You can get a high-end RME. You can get a high-end interface.
Right, but I'm saying you can do the same thing with Pro Tools.
Yeah, and I think coming from scratch is it's not that it doesn't freak me out that much. It's more about having just paid. I mean, we just converted a boatload of TDMs to native.
Right.
And
oh, by the way, now we got to do it again.
No, you don't. If native works, you don't. All you need is the new software.
But
well, in some places you do, in some places you don't.
But I mean, if you've done conversions to native and those native systems are getting the job done, they're only going to get better with 10 because of the RAM caching.
But I'm talking about isn't necessarily Pro Tools only. I'm talking about it really makes me think about just the whole digital thing in the first place.
But you know what? But Pro Tools is the standard. You either have the standard or you don't. All these other systems are cool, and I still sequence in Cubase and use other things as well. But you either have the standard or you don't. And to play in the real world, you got to have Pro Tools.
And I do agree because, you know, when we had a studio called Signet, and we had this beautiful vintage Neve console. And then all they said, if you want to stay in business, you have to get the SSL 9000. Take out another massive loan and buy a big, big, big one. And half the guys that we use in our facility were starting to buy systems at home. So what do? We shut it down. Because it doesn't make sense. Now, those were the times where you had to put a second in your house.
Right.
To buy the console. Forget the tape machine.
Right.
So now, in retrospect, especially I think in the music business, you're building a studio, $100,000 is a $1 million facility. $50,000 gets you in the game. $100,000 gets you in the game with hardware, software, and microphones. Especially Mojave mics.
But what I'm saying too though is, listen, it really for me it made me realize how temporary a lot of this gear is. A lot of the gear is very temporary. And that to me, I just find I could probably spend my money a little bit more wisely. So what I did is I put together my own budget. I'm going to buy more analog and I'm going to harness the power of more tracks and print more stuff, but do more analog.
But then, you know, you need more really IO. Cool,
right. But even
which if costs
I
get, more money.
No, but even if I stay with my 16, I stay with my 16 IO, that's plenty of IO. 16 IO and a patch bay can do wonders and I'll be able to buy 500 series and buy racks and modules and things like that.
I think that's a much better plan.
And processing.
I mean, this, you know, my main rig has 160 inputs on it. You think I'm going to go and actually buy all new interfaces? No friggin' way. I mean, that's a fortune.
I just think.
So let me ask you guys a question, because I'm not working at the cutting edge or, you know, doing post or anything like that. I'm just doing music and I do some mixing for people. You know, rarely is it more than 32 tracks. I've got an 8-core. I've got a HD1 card,
right,
and I've got a UAD card that's fully loaded, and I use a Lynx Aurora and a Dangerous Music D-Box.
Get a native card, it'll blow your mind out.
Yeah, I was going to say, you switch to native, and you've all of a sudden got a new life.
I mean, it's huge.
And go to 10?
Yeah.
Yes.
Go to 10 with a native card. You don't need the HD1. One thing also to keep in mind, Avid is one of the very few hardware companies that actually offers trade-ins for this stuff.
That's really where I think that for the people that have been loyal, who've been using it for decades, and who already paid it, it's almost like we're no longer buying gear, we lease it.
Right.
So it gets to a point, then your lease gets up, and you got to buy it again. And I think that if Digi, in its tradition, does well, it should find ways of taking care of its user base to be able to do the upgrade and to be able to get to it. Again, I don't mind the software costs, but I think the one that, you know, it's the hardware.
No,
you
know, I agree. And I go ahead.
Although the Pro Tools upgrade price is high. There's just no two ways about it.
But there's different pricing on it.
Yeah, but it's still – it's high.
Compared to
what they're competing against, it's high.
Well, I agree that the software price is really outrageous compared to what you can get out there. But having said that, you know, I'm going to upgrade my – like I said, where I mix during the day, we got two systems, HDX systems, going to go full-blown that way. My own system, though, I will tell you that, you know, I'm going to get – my Pro Tools rig, it may be all native, but I'm gonna go to 10. But when I'm thinking about coming in on a big system, you know, I'm looking at like a six, like an Icon. If I was gonna do music, you know, I'm looking at a 1608, an automated 1608. That is, I just can't tell you how fun it is.
And so
I
was never around automation.
Does it
use the DAW or has it got its own?
It has its own automation. It has own movie faders.
But you know,
but and hold on one second, I'll let you talk. The thing is you know, I learned when I got into mixing, I started on a Pro Tool system, right? I started mouse mixing on a Pro Tool system and then got into Pro Control. And so my faders has always come from the digital world, right? I sat behind an analog desk with faders where it just reminded me of when I was younger and went to some of the studios and watched those guys mix. And it just, I don't know, it was
something. A lot more fun.
It was fun. And yeah. I will say that it was fun. And then you just flip a switch and you can control your DAW. You hit a flip here and you're back into your faders. And it's just, there's just something very connective and very fun.
How much is that console?
About one. I think you can get 32 channels. So a 1608 with a sidecar and automation for like $100,000 or something like that, somewhere around there, which is comparable to, you know, a high end, you know, Icon. It's just, it's up there.
And frankly, I would never use console automation ever again.
Yeah,
I hated it from the beginning. I hated every version of every model of every kind of console automation. It never, it can't compete with DAW automation, as far as I'm concerned.
I totally understand that, because there's a lot of really cool things that you can do with DAW automation. And I'm not saying you would automate everything on that. But having said that, there's something really kind of cool about doing all your major moves on your DAW and then just really finessing it in with your with the console. It's musical. It sounds great. It sounds good. And it's just music-wise. And you know what? It's an investment that you don't have to worry about, you know, we're no longer to support the 1608.
So it's Capstone.
But wait a minute. I agree. API is doing just fine. But there are plenty of people who spent hundreds and hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars of consoles, who are now unable to get support for that reason.
The faders go, and it's a lot more expensive.
Absolutely. But at the same time, there's also tons of consoles that are going all over the place that are only sounding better with age too. So I'm just saying it brings in, you know, analog is getting more and more relevant as we get more and more digital. That's basically
not based on the budgets I've been seeing.
And the thing is, where I have to admit, I kind of disagree a little bit, and that is agree and disagree. And what I mean by that is, I think buying console modules to record into DAWs is the only way to go. I mean, it's great. You get the sound. You're able to capture the sound of so many great mic pre's and EQs and stuff. Once you get into the DAW, the practicality of the business of our industry is that I need to be able to call up something. And I have a whole huge rack of outboard gear.
I agree.
And I have to admit, I'm veering away from it sometimes because I just need to be able to, you know, 3 months later, I forgot what I was even doing. Boom, call it up. It's already there. Every plugin's there. And I'm back in the game again in about as long as it takes to boot the session.
Right. But with the increased track count of the software that's coming, it's really easy to put together a little 500 rack, 10 modules, 5 modules, 6 modules, whatever you want to do, and print that stuff. Just print it, you know, and then keep moving.
To take that and
obviously is way more towards music than post, because post is a whole different ballgame. But it just it's, you know, instead of spending and trying to keep up with your platinum plugins, your bundle, you know what? Why don't you buy a little bit of plugins here and buy a little bit of analog here, you know, because you're going to have gear that you'll be able to keep.
But then you got to remember what you did, and you got a filing management, you got to put the files there, and is it...
Well, you just print it.
If you print it, you don't have to remember anything.
But if you want to go back to it, I mean, you're saying...
You got to work there.
Especially on the music side, we use so many instruments. I mean, you can't store a guitar. I mean, like, if you have a guy come up and play great guitar...
I agree, using analog gear to get it into the system. Again,
right. Yeah, using great
but
gear.
But once you're there and you're mixing it, doing the final mix, and you've got your plugins there and you've captured your sound.
Yeah, usually you don't go back.
Yeah, then
yeah, I mean, that's in the old days when you would try to recall an analog mix, it was never
the same anyway.
Never the same, right. You know. It would just get you close and
But once again, you know, while you're creating, you get that little loop, for instance. We get a loop and you go to the Moog, the new Moog 500, you know, series, the ladder filter, and you get your loop and you put it in there and you find a little tweak that you want and it sounds great. Well, you print that. Boom, you got it. You've got 500 series little module that's not going to need any 2.0 upgrades. You have to worry about anything.
I think the module stuff is fantastic.
That's what I'm saying.
It's just the console, the analog console. I don't know. I'm having a bit of a time.
Well, the console is only relative if you're going to be tracking. If you're going to be needing a lot of, if you're going to be doing a lot of bands, it's music. You know, it's not post, it's music. If you're going to do bands, if you're going to do groups, things like that,
that there's a huge revolution on the post side where everybody who has worked on Euphonics, I'm getting calls all the time like, okay, in Pro Tools, how do you do this? Because now the big Euphonics consoles can control an infinite amount of Pro Tools systems in 12, 13, 14.
You know, and this brings up an interesting point. So they put the Euphonics channel strip in OS 10.
Yep. Pro Tools 10.
Pro Tools 10. I worked on a System 5 for a long time, from when it first came out to, you know, for 5 years anyway. I never thought that it was that great.
You know what? You're not alone there. There's been some kickback about that, actually.
But you know what it is for those guys that use it? They know it. It's like, okay. So they could, you know.
Yeah, it wasn't bad, but it wasn't.
You know what? As much as anything else, it's reasonably good, and it's a huge marketing bonanza able to say we've got the channel.
It's like the Lexicon 224 now in the UA stuff. It's there because you know how to use it. But it's not like it's the best reverb that's ever.
Oh, we couldn't wait to get rid of them when the blue one came out. Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, we're going to wrap it up here because we're running long. Gee, who would have guessed?
What a shock.
But, you know, I'll listen, I love digital. I love Pro Tools. I'm just saying is, as you start seeing all these upgrades and you start seeing how much it's going to cost to replace your plugins yet again, it's not a bad idea to start looking at analog gear, you know, and just a balance. That's my point. There's a balance of stuff. It's a good time.
And it should also be interesting because I'd say sonically I've always not totally cared for the sound of Digi. It's been convenient. But now that they're doing floating point and the auxes have huge amounts more headroom, is this going to be interesting? Especially with companies now wanting to put in summing amp plugins, like make it sound like this. Like Slate and other people are saying, hey, you know what? We can get the sound of a Neve console busing in a plugin. Kind of interesting.
Yeah, the other thing that's interesting is that talking about the beauty of analog gear now is there's so much cool stuff that's so much less expensive than as it was dying out.
Yeah.
And in multiple instances, like the UA stuff is amazing.
Yeah, how much a 480 XL was or something like that, it'd be like over 10 grand.
And,
you know, now you can get a lot of cool little stuff for not a lot of money. Same way with microphones.
Yeah.
You know, there's just no need to spend $100,000 on mics anymore.
Yeah. Can,
we should also ask, did Mojave have something new at the show?
What is the latest? Oh, yeah, we did. It's the 301 FET, which is the multi-pattern version of the 201 FET, the one that you know.
Yep.
And, you know, at NAMM we brought out the 300, which is the multi-pattern version of the 200. So that's – we kind of have a complete line now. We've got all the bases covered.
And how much more does the multi-pattern cost?
Well, for the 301 FET, I don't know yet. Somewhere between 100 – probably around 150 more.
Okay.
So it's $695. It'll probably be about – you know, 850, something like that. I really don't even know yet. We were showing it at AES, but officially launching it at NAMM.
That's very reasonable.
Yeah, that is. All of our mics are so inexpensive, and they're so great.
Bring an extra one to NAMM. You know the way we roll.
Well, you know, just come over and get it. Don't make me schlep it down there.
Oh, no, you're schlepping.
And just so you guys know, we're big fans of Mojave Audio.
Absolutely.
I mean, David Royer. We're up for our first tech award for the 300, and we're up against Royer for the R101.
That's hilarious.
Why don't you know what? Just to, since the last show you were on was number 49. Thank you, Jeremy, for finding that. Why don't you tell us a little bit about Mojave really quick?
Mojave Audio, we make David Royer's condenser mics. Before Royer Labs existed and before he reinvented ribbon mics and brought them back from the edge, He had a one-man shop at his house in Fullerton, at his mom's house, and was hand-making condenser mics under the Mojave name. The original R121 Royer prototype says Mojave Audio on it. But since it was so revolutionary, they decided to start a different company for the ribbons, you know, and the rest is history. So, and, you know, the ribbons are all made a mile from here in Burbank. They're all handmade in the shop. When the Mojave mics started, David had been messing around with the Chinese mics for a long time and had actually published a couple of articles in Tape Op how to buy the Marshall MXL mics and do mods and make them sound really good. that created this demand. So it was like, well, we should actually make them ourselves so we can control the quality. But there was still kind of a stigma about the Chinese mics at the time, a lot of mystery at that time. This was 6 years ago, so they didn't want to. And also, Royer has been branded to mean ribbons. Royer means ribbons. So we brought back the Mojave name to do the condensers. You know, now there's no secrets anymore, and there's nothing, you know, it's all good. We use the best of both worlds. We use American parts and, you know, Chinese capsules, and it works out just fine. But we're sister companies in the same building with a lot of shared ownership. But we make the condenser mics. Where he makes the ribbons.
Great. And they're great mics.
They really are. Yeah, David, you know, it's a great working with David.
Rob, how would you characterize the Mojave sound, just if people wanted to?
You know what? It's funny. A lot of times we get called by people who say, you know, we're putting together a studio. I need a great vocal mic, or I need a great mic for this or that. And everybody, especially people with not that much experience, they've heard, oh, I have to get this vintage Neumann or this vintage whatever. And the truth is, the Mojave, more than any other mic that we've come across in the last few years, if you just get people to try it, it's just an awesome, great-sounding mic. I mean, it doesn't sound like anything in particular vintage.
They sound a lot more expensive than they are.
Yeah, they just they sound really good. And I've worked with a lot of singers who, as soon as they heard themselves on that mic, it just, you know, like a light went off. They just, it was an amazing new sound for them. And I think there are pictures on your website of me in your booth with Stevie. And,
oh, yeah. Stevie's singing in my ear.
That's right.
It was pretty awesome. And, yeah, but thanks again.
he heard the mic, and that was at a NAMM show, I think.
He was there for like 10 minutes going back and forth between the 200 and the 201 FET.
And, I mean, he obviously has every mic known to man, but there's just something about the Mojave mics. They're reasonably priced, but if you just forget about price and compare them to other stuff, they just sound really, really good.
Well, there's no business people there. There's no grown-ups. Me and David are both engineers, and we, you know, let's like, we make mics that we like the sound of and we use. And so we use really high quality components where it counts.
And they're still
and they're
sort of like
simple designs, you know?
But they're like a secret weapon. A lot of people still haven't heard of them.
Yeah.
Nothing personal.
Yeah,
but when
they
hear them, you know, they're always blown away. And I've probably sold half a dozen of them just by referring people to have them check them out.
Yeah. I owe you a hat.
You probably do.
No, they're really good. The other thing about Mojave mics too is when you get a vocal that's been tracked on that, you don't have to schmutz with it too much.
Yeah.
I mean, to get it to cut and to fit, it's very musical.
Just really good.
Know? It's just a really good musical.
And that's the point I was making in this day and age. I mean, there's a lot of decent gear out there that's not 10 grand.
Right.
Yeah.
No, and Mojave microphones are definitely one of them. And the good thing is too, is they cut, and they don't have like, you just don't have to do a lot of work. You don't have to get rid of a lot of the schmutz that you would have to on some of the other mics where you start rolling this off and dipping here and killing this frequency and that. It's just, they cut really well.
Yeah, our David has a way with microphones.
He sure does.
He sure does. All right. Well, thank you, Dusty.
One other thing I wanted to mention.
Yes.
We won't talk about it long, but go to honkychateau.net. Anybody that knows about the Honky Chateau Elton John album, or Ken Scott, Bobby, we were talking about this earlier. It was a famous studio in France in, what, the 70s?
Yeah.
And one of my best friends who worked with me at Mad Dog over the year, James Cull, has made it his mission to bring the studio back to life. And it's a great website. It's got the history of the place on there. It was kind of an important little spot for a minute. A lot of great work was done there. David Bowie and Elton John. And who else worked there? Pink Floyd, I think, worked there.
Yeah, there was a lot.
Grateful
Dead for a half a second. Although the story about the Dead is they went for a to do a festival that was canceled. So they decided that they're in France and they wanted to play for people. So they did a free concert for the townspeople around the Honky Chateau. But somebody spiked the wine with LSD and got everybody screwed up in the village, including the police department. And as a result, what happened from then on, they were very, very strict about drugs at in the chateau. And there, you know, rumors were that the phones were tapped and everything. And you know,
paranoia ran.
The fun was over.
Right. So go to honkychateau.net and you can find out all about this. Awesome. It's really cool.
That's cool. Well, really quick, if you want to find out more about Mojave Microphones, go to MojaveAudio.com. That's MojaveAudio.com. That's the place to go. Like I said, we recommend them highly. They're one of the good guys. And when I was talking about going to AES and hearing some really bad microphones, it wasn't Mojave Microphones. As a matter of fact, you know, you hear Mojave Microphone, then you hear the other microphones, and you're like, oh, you know what? You shouldn't even call yourself a microphone. You should just call yourself something else, but not a microphone.
Transducer.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Vocal transducer.
And some of them were really well-known companies, too. Anyhow, Rob.
Yes, Mike.
What are you up to? Anything fun and exciting you can talk about?
A few things. Well, I just did another Google project.
Nice.
Also been flowing in nicely, which was cool. I've been spending a lot of my time now, you know, I rebuilt a large part of my studio and I'm just kind of finishing that up now, but rewiring the place, you know, when everything is ripped apart and you get to do it again from scratch, you always do it better. And I always used to say it's a good idea every now and then to just rip it all apart and force yourself to do it again, but no one ever really has the time. But because I have no choice, I'm doing it again and doing it much better and smarter. And I'm not at this point, I mean, I'm very excited about all the new Pro Tools stuff, but at this point, I'm just kind of sitting tight to see where it all leads. I'm moving up in software to Pro Tools 10, but as far as the hardware, I'm just kind of taking a wait and see for a little bit. There's Pro Tools 10 is at the beginning of a long life, and there's time. And I think that one of the things that Avid was nervous about was causing a little bit of panic. I think they sort of told more of the story with this release than they often do. But it's part of a really smart long-term strategy. They're a really brilliant group of people. And I think the only part of the message that maybe didn't get through as much as some of the other parts is that you shouldn't panic. So I'm following that advice. I'm not panicking. And as the next few months come by and as the HDXs come out and all the new plugins come out, because there's still a lot of plugin work to be done, I'm just going to wait and see how it all plays out. But there's time. Don't panic.
Scott, how about you?
I work for food at this point. I think I've been going through some changes in the room today. I've been re-EQing my room. And what's interesting is I'm jumping back and forth from one of our bigger dubbing stages. So I'm trying to really take the time to understand how my room translates to some of our other Todd stages.
Nice.
And it's kind of fun. It's a really journey. You know, I'm listening. I've got three sets of speakers, which is blowing my mind because they obviously all sound different. And because some are horned and some are, you know, dome tweeters. And it's kind of fun. Just a lot of listening, going back and forth and, you know, being kind of real picky. And it's interesting hearing the Euphonics console, mixing something on that. And then mixing in the box, there is a difference a little bit. You know, even the way the faders, the volume changes on the faders, especially in the lower volume, all of a sudden you're like, it's smoother.
Mm-hmm.
And so
you know, you're going to love Floating Point for that reason.
You know, but we did on native, so we were floating on native. There are slight differences, but it's great. You know, it's at the end of the day, it's not going to matter hugely, but it is the tactility. I guess that's a new word. tactileness, whatever. Yeah.
Tactility.
I like it.
I think it's tactilitude, actually.
Tactilitude. But no, it's good. So I've got that. I'm mixing a lot at the moment and keeping busy. And also, I think I've said I'm at the beginning of a long journey of doing a lot of recording.
Nice.
We recorded another rocket. I couldn't make this one, but I sent my team out.
Nice.
At Vandenberg, and we got another rocket.
Nice.
So,
and by the way, if I'm not mistaken, with native, just to clear this up, with native, you're hearing Floating Point plugins, but you're not hearing Floating Point mixing yet until 10. So Floating Point mixing means you have full resolution, even at low levels, and you will – people are going to be impressed.
So 9's not Floating Point on the mix side?
No, it's still a 48-bit fader, I think, integer.
Oh, okay.
I think so. There will be sonic improvements, especially if you do really dynamic stuff, which in film you'll be on all day.
I'm not that worried about it.
It's going to be
impressive
for high dynamic range stuff.
Bobby O. How about you?
I've been busier than ever, which is a good thing.
I know, because every time I send out an email, sorry, can't make this one.
Oh, he's here tonight.
I know, that's great.
I've been producing the third Snoo album, and it's the third one I've produced for him, and I have Ken Scott engineering for me, the legendary Ken Scott, which is
fabulous.
The guy just has the touch. I mean, he did the Beatles and
Bowie
and, you know, Elton and whatever. So just being part of that, being able to observe him is and listen to his artistry is quite interesting. I also just finished the book of Ken Scott. It's his memoirs that I co-wrote with him. I think that'll be out April, something like that. But it's actually going to be very interesting because he's had such a wide life with so many artists that we all grew up with. It's just amazing. So many things he's done, and there's stories about all of them. So it's
so the book isn't just Beatles, it's everything?
It's the Beatles, it's Bowie, it's Elton, it's Missing Persons, it's Supertramp, and all sorts of people in between.
Wow.
George Harrison, all the Beatles he did when they were no longer with the Beatles.
Right.
So it's, you know, all that. It's very cool. And then I have two other books in the pipeline that are finished and waiting to come out. The Audio Mixing Boot Camp and the Audio Recording Boot Camp. And those are a series of exercises for people that are just starting in the business to get them good. Because usually, you know, most books are just, well, here's how you do it. But in this case, it's try this, now try that, now it's a bunch of exercises. So I think it's a different approach, which hopefully will be good. And then I'm also doing a lynda.com instructional course.
Wow.
I love lynda.com.
Yeah, and this is based on one of those books, and I think I'll be doing a few more after that. And then on top of that, I have a 3D music project that's in development that I'm producing that's going along. So, I'm busy.
So you'll sleep in, like, April.
And I've said it before, but I'll say it again. Bobby has written more books than I've read. That is true.
And you know what? And we're not going to do it this because we're running so long, but we do have a winner for your Guitar Player Handbook.
Oh, sure. Yeah,
but
yeah.
We're going to do that the next podcast, okay. And we'll do it at the front because, it's just going to go too long. So, well, that's great, Bobby.
And what are you doing, Mike?
A couple things. Number one, actually working on a project with our good friend Scott Gershon. That was kind of fun, actually, going to make that connection. Can't talk about it. But when we can, we will talk about it. No, you know what, though? Let me just tell you really quick. You know, sometimes you just need to hire the right people, right? And it's only going to make you look better because I, you know, a project came in and I said, you know what, let's just not mess around. We need some sound design. Let's just go to the best. So contacted Scott. We put together a meeting, took the people over there. It was kind of like, you know, we had them at hello. Going into Scott's room is just, it's just amazing. It's just this big giant audio playground. So it was, you know, it only made me look better just because, you know, it's going to sound great. They're going to come back and the sound design is going to be awesome. And then it's going to be
no pressure here. Huh?
No, but come on. It's just,
it'll be fun. I'm looking
just
forward to it.
Hire the right people to do the right job and you end up looking better than you should. And I'm a good example of that. But so looking forward to doing that. And also, like I said, I'm in the process of updating my studio, doing a big update. So it's going to be really kind of interesting to see where we go with this. And I'll keep you guys posted along because we're talking about some serious money. And
are you doing it because you weren't able to do certain kinds of work or because you're adding rooms or what?
I'm doing it because Pro Tools that I have right now is chugging along and I need to upgrade and I needed to upgrade. And I'm getting into some bigger things that I'm doing and doing a little bit more music and things like that. And it's just, you know, you either really with digital, you either update or die, because there is no vintage digital. So if you want to keep it going, then you got to keep going. And it's, and you know, and it's not just Pro Tools software either. You got to think about your plugins. You got to think of the new plugin format. You got to think about all those things. Although, having said that, you know, your plugins right now, your RTAS are going to work with Pro Tools 10 and the HDX and the whole thing.
I don't know. I just got a vintage Nuendo 1.0 system that really...
You need another one?
So, you know, you put... I'm still trying to process this whole thing, and I'm still trying to figure out, you know, where to go and how to go and how to get there and how to spend money wisely. And
remember, don't panic.
Oh, I'm not panicking. Not too much. Listen, when you start talking about checks that are like more zeros than you're used to seeing, you're like, ooh. Yeah. You know, so it's going to be interesting to see what's going to happen. You know, I look at my Pro Tools. I'll tell you one thing that I forgot to mention is the Magma chassis. They have a Thunderbolt PCIe 3-slot adapter that they showed over at AES that will be blessed to run Pro Tools, which opens up a whole nother world, especially somebody like myself who is very portable. And, you know, I got rid of my desktop system a long time ago. I've been working off of laptops. I mean, if I can have a portable Pro Tools
laptop
system.
Laptop HDX system.
That is just disgusting, you know? But, and having said that, and I know this is kind of going kind of long, but there's some really cool things that are happening on the iPad and on the tablet.
Animoog.
Yeah, like Animoog. But it's just, you know, we are so close from...
It's the beginning of something really... Yeah.
Something really kind of cool. And I remember the first time I mixed a commercial on a laptop in a coffee shop, I can't wait till I get to mix a commercial on an iPad. You know what I'm saying? Because... And usually, you know, it's not going to be anything gigantic, but, you know, a couple little tracks of sound effects and some voiceover and some music. But, you know, that day is going to come. That is, it's just, we're just on the cusp of something great happening there. So it'll be interesting to see all these different levels of audio. You've got the big expensive systems. You've got the consumer systems. You've got Studio One doing some amazing stuff over here. You've got iPad. I mean, really, this is just...
Portability.
Yeah, it's just a weird little time right now. So it'll be, I'll be curious to see what happens at NAMM. I'll be curious to see what's going to come out there, what software is going to come out there, where that's going to go. All that to say is, I'm scared.
Don't panic.
All right, well, hey, listen, we went long. We're going to wrap this up. But before we get going, a couple things. I just want to thank everybody for your participation on the podcast page and Facebook. You can always drop us a message there at facebook.com/audionowcast. And also, if you want to send us an email, audio@nowcastnetwork.com. That's audio@nowcastnetwork.com. Last thing I want to talk to you guys about, is we've been getting some requests for people sending us, music or links to music for us to listen and do some critiques. And as much as we would love to give you guys feedback on an individual basis, it's just we really can't do that. It's just a liability issue. All these guys make their living writing music or mixing music, and that just can open up some doors that we just don't want to expose ourselves to on the liability. But we'd love to, you know, give you general advice about mixing and things like that. And you're more than welcome to ask us. And, you know, quite frankly, you know, play your mix for friends that are around you, people that know you or people that are into the style of music, because they'll probably be able to, A, be a lot nicer, because you don't want to be around Rob and one of his critiques.
Oh, I'm so nice. Don't give me a bad rep.
But it's not that we don't want to do that for you guys. It's just a liability that we really can't open ourselves up to. Having said that, that's about it. So once again, if you want to reach us, you can reach us at facebook.com/audionowcast or audio@nowcastnetwork.com. Until next time, we will see you later.
Listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by API and West Wave Audio. The Audio Nowcast is hosted by Mike Rodriguez and uses AFEX's 230 Master Channel Voice Processor. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.